Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight, 442 for comics originally released on January 27th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Deathstroke number 14. This is written by James Bonney. We got art and cover by Tyler Kirkham. And in this issue, Deathstroke has to break into LexCorp. He is chasing his daughter, who has been taken, and he has been led to believe that's where she is. There were a couple of things about this issue that just struck me as a little bit odd and funny. Particularly they keep cutting back to the setup of the mission, that kind of a thing. They do it a time or two here. And we've got his buddy or whatever, Victor, who acts as kind of his co-pilot, if you will. You know how everybody has the comm set these days and somebody back at the base giving them the, oh, turn left, turn right, you're about to, you know, meet up with more people or whatever. Deathstroke shouldn't need that. So him having that just struck me as a little odd. And this is very much what I consider kind of that roller coaster ride kind of a comic book. It's fun, it's entertaining, but ultimately it just kind of feels like it's just kind of marking time. It's not filler exactly, because, I mean, Deathstroke gets past one obstacle, sort of, and kind of moves on to the next, you know, with a requisite cliffhanger ending or whatnot. But it's one of those that if you were to miss this, did you miss anything integral in his life, in his adventure, or whatever? I'm going to say no, not really.
Yeah, it was interesting because it was, like, nonstop. I mean, maybe 99% action.
Mm-hmm.
And just this back and forth and really a really high energy chapter of this story, and I appreciate that. I mean, you don't see that all the time, but I really thought that it was really amping up the action in mm-hmm. this issue, and liked some of the stuff with the little bit of flashback we got. I thought that was pretty good. Interesting next battle,
yeah.
Splash on the last page. But I can see where you're coming from, because I mean, fast forward to that next issue and the recap page is infiltrated LexCorp, fought.
Well, I mean, they could almost start the next issue on the splash page they end this one on.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't necessarily object to that. And it's not that this was bad. I think you were right. They really had some great action sequences, some fun stuff, a few good moments there. But it didn't really have anything amazing in the way of character development or serious plot progression. I mean, the dialogue was okay, the art was fine, and it was a good while I'm reading it comic.
Yeah.
But it's also hard for me to say, oh, somebody's got to pick it up because of this, that, or the other. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, but it's... Chuck Dixon used to write a bunch of comics this way at one point in the Gotham section of the DC lineup. They were always great reads, but it was one of those where... If you were to quiz me as to what happened in those books, even shortly after I read them, I'd be a little hard-pressed because they were fun, but they were a little forgettable. And I mean, a year from now, are you really going to remember this book?
Oh, no. No.
and that's not a bad thing.
Right.
But it's not a good thing either. I guess I just expect a little bit better than this. But again, I didn't hate reading it. I found it fun. But, I mean, I've read a couple of other titles where you get these middle chapters where it's, we've got to fit this into a trade. Trade's going to have 6 issues, got about 4 issues worth of stories. So here's obstacle number 1. We'll toss that in as this issue. Go kind of from one cliffhanger to another.
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't seem to have changed a lot in tone since the first issue that we reviewed way back a mm-hmm. year ago or so. And, you know, that one really never grabbed me. And although I thought, you know, the action was, if that's what you're into, there's some payoff here. You can really see some action. And I think the art is strong. It was a well-drawn book. And, but I don't think there's anything here for you to hand to somebody and say, here's a can't miss. Here's something that you need to add to your pull list. This is one of those nebulous groups of titles that are also being published by DC that are kind of interchangeable and slightly above average. Sometimes they're good, but never amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that sums us up pretty well. You know, there were a few things here that I thought they were kind of telegraphing a little who's behind some of this stuff with his daughter, but it'll be probably another few issues before we really find that out. And that kind of annoys me, because it's not like I feel this story needs to play out over a 5-6 month period. But again, while I'm in the issue, I'm enjoying it. How much of this will really, you know, be easy for me to recall when I get to the next part of this next month? It's like, oh yeah, he's in this situation. That's where we left off. For me, this was a C+. It was good. It was a little above average. But there's nothing I can really point to and say this is why somebody ought to read this title starting at this point, kind of thing.
Yep, I think you're spot on. It's a C+. It is sells about 25,000 copies a month. So I think in DC's world, that's safe. I think you kind of have to drop below 20, don't you?
I would say it's safe for the moment.
For the moment, yeah.
But I wouldn't expect this to hit necessarily issue 24 or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's certainly, there are a dozen or more titles probably below it on the charts that would go first.
Yeah. And as you pointed out, this is very much a piece of a story that's going to be collected in trade. And it's not even the good piece of a story where you feel like you've not only got a satisfying single issue, but you got a piece, you know, something that's a part of a greater whole as well. This is pretty much just that piece, just a slice of this whole story. So that's always kind of a downer.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, between the commercial parts of a TV episode, it's that chapter, not that full episode. And, again, it was a good chapter, but that's all it was.
Yes.
You know, I would like to see more out of their books these days. And I don't think I'm alone in that.
No, I don't think so either.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 3. This is, let's see, written by Brandon Montclair and Amy Reeder, and we've got Natasha Busto on the artist. Have you been reading this book?
No, I did a marathon, all three of them, but I hadn't been reading it now.
Okay. What did you think of it?
It's not bad. It is a very much an all-ages book. I did not know that Devil Dinosaur, its origins. I don't think I've ever read an old-school Devil Dinosaur comic, so I didn't realize until I got to the end that this was an existing property. I
haven't read the original Devil Dinosaur and Moon Boy stuff. I did read some of his earlier adventures earlier than this, but later than that. Mm-hmm. What was he in? He was in one of the X books at one point.
Yeah. I like her. She's a science-y kid, and she's a kid that's easy to root for. The story is a bit weak and flimsy. The monkey people that were kidnapping her, that didn't work for me at all. That was just strange.
I don't know what I cared for less about those cavemen, that they were in the modern attire or that they were sort of speaking bits of English.
It came and went too. It was a series of grunts for a while, and then it was, wow, they're doing a pretty good job of English there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was a bit of a weird angle.
I agree. Go ahead.
Yeah, but most of this is pretty unsubstantial. Not much to it. But I do think that character has some positive qualities. I did kind of like her. They just didn't give her much to work with. And she's not doing much that's interesting. I mean, I read all the first three, and we probably could have made that one issue.
I would agree with that. I think it could have been a little bit tighter storytelling. I think the Moon Girl character, Lunella, is a lot of fun, frankly. I think she's a breakout character, but this is not a breakout book. But it's got bits and pieces of that. I love how they've established Moon Girl here as One, how she gets the nickname, how it's kind of apropos or whatever, but how she's really, really smart and a bit of a smart aleck, too.
Mm-hmm.
When the teacher is, you know, hey, what's the question, you know, what is oxidation or, you know, whatever in the stuff in the science class? And she comes back with phlogiston or something like that. Hell, I can't even pronounce the word. I'm like, where did this word come from? So, of course, I hop into Google, find the Wikipedia article. It's the theory, it's an obsolete scientific theory that postulated that fire is like there's a fire-like element that's called, however you pronounce that, that's contained within combustible bodies and released during combustion. So, like, when you would light a match, there's an actual fire element that you've released. And just how she pulled out a fairly, I think, esoteric, scientific theory to basically insult the science teacher of this is rudimentary, you know, hocus-pocus stuff. Let's learn real science.
And they didn't define it for us.
It's one of those that if you don't get it, you don't get it, but you don't miss anything. But if you do, it's like, ooh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's an extra layer for you. I did not get it, and I did not look it up.
So it's a fun Easter egg, but you don't lose something. It's not like the point of the story is missed at that point. But when we get to like the underground or the basement laboratory in the school or whatever, it's like, okay, this is a little far-fetched.
Yeah.
But then there's also a devil dinosaur kind of foreshadowing one of the next scenes or whatever. And at first I'm like, what's going on here? And then it's like, oh, okay, when it happens, I get it.
Yeah.
And there's some fun bits here and there. There's a Flintstones reference that's good. You know, there's a cameo at the end that just, okay, it's setting up the next scene, fine. So there's parts of this that I think are good. There are other parts of it where the story, yeah, it's a little weak. It's a little decompressed. There's a couple of parts here and there that, like the cavemen, just, you know, how are they learning English like this? It makes no sense. But the series shows promise. This is one of those where I think if it had had the right editor, because it's edited by Mark Panicia and Emily Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Panicia, that name's ringing a bell, but I can't place what else he's done. Emily Shaw doesn't ring any bells there. But if they'd had one of the old school classic editors who have also gone and done a lot of writing, you know, a Mark Waid, a Marv Wolfman, you know, that school of editor, I think this could have been just a heck of a lot better book. Not that it's bad, but I think somebody could have, in the editing stage, helped the creators focus the story a bit better,
yeah,
tighten it up and improve it, and this could have been definitely a breakout hit.
Yeah, I think I would have went to the creators and I said, okay, I know you've got this 5-issue, 6-issue story you want to tell. That's great, and we're going to do that. You're going to do it in 5 instead of 6, and you're going to give me a solid, almost one-and-done story that is very rewarding for the debut issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can tell your little story arc. But, you know, you blow it when you solicit these things and it's a chapter. I just drives me crazy that they don't do this. Now, I know this is issue 3, so there's no rhyme. This shouldn't be a self-contained in today's market.
I disagree with that. I think it should have been have a self-contained aspect to it.
Yeah, a little bit.
Something here gets beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
But then it's building up to a bigger beginning, middle, and end for a trade or something.
Yeah, this one I am worried about sales-wise. It's already at 20. Its second issue was already at 21,000. So we're going to get whatever attrition the third issue gets out of the box and we'll be below that Mendoza line for Marvel. And we'll be lucky to get, 6 or 8 out of these, right?
I would expect 6. Marvel tends to cut things off a lot earlier than DC, and given that it's so close to the 20,000 mark, it's clearly going to drop below that within probably with this third issue here. So I'd be surprised if it gets continued beyond the first arc.
Yeah. So maybe they know that going in. Maybe they've already got, they know it's probably not going to be a breakout. It's not going to get past that first trade. So let's make the trade the thing. And we play to the trade market.
I think that's a mistake, though.
Oh, definitely is. Yeah.
And I think they've got a breakout character here. I think we won't see this title after this arc. I do think we'll see this character.
Just her, not the devil dinosaur?
Her and the dinosaur. I just don't know where. Because I think she would fit in well with like the younger half of the all new, all different Avengers.
Yeah.
Nova, Ms. Marvel, the Miles Morales Spider-Man. So if they can find a good spot for the character, I hope we keep seeing her.
Yeah, yeah, there are kernels of a Ms. Marvel type breakout here. It's just not fully realized, and this issue is not a great example of comic book storytelling. For me, it was well below average. It was a C-.
I can see that. I'm going to go again with the C+ because, you know, I think it had its moments. It came really close to getting that that B- for me, but it just had some silliness and some things that just didn't quite make sense. It's one of those that, man, I see the potential there. It's just not making it to the page. And that really frustrates me. There are a couple of things. It's like, yeah, this was a long shot and it just didn't work out. Okay, fine. That happens. But when it's a swing and a miss like this, but such a close one to a home run or whatever, that's just disappointing. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah.
This is Faith number 1 from Valiant. This is one of the Harbinger kids. She's broken away from the team. This is written by Jody Hauser, and we've got art by Francis Portella and also Marguerite Sauvage.
Sauvage sounds good, yeah.
We'll go with that. And I apologize if I'm butchering names left, right, and center. It's just they don't come with a pronunciation guide. And frankly, even if they did, I'd probably still mispronounce it. So I guess I'm better off with them not doing it. This was one of those that I wasn't sure if the character would work in a solo title. I thought she was okay in Harbinger's, but not one that's like, ooh, she should have her own book. And I'll be honest, I was also a bit underwhelmed by Jody Hauser's Orphan Black miniseries. But I think this worked surprisingly well. You know, we get a decent, if quick and off to the side explanation that she's left her boyfriend Torque, she's left the other Harbinger, she's going out and having her own life. And it's kind of a fun, what would a fangirl turned superhero do kind of a story. She's very much a kind of the nerdy comic book geek sci-fi mm-hmm. fan.
Yeah.
So she's living that life, if you will, as the secret identity and all that kind of stuff. Is this the world's most amazing story? No, but it holds together decently, and it's a good read. It's got some substance to the story. Not tons and tons of depth, but enough that I don't feel like they had just breezed through it, or it was decompressed, or there was nothing there.
Yeah, they took their sweet time getting this thing out. She was a real breakout, what, a year and a half ago or something, when people were talking about this character. And, you know, in a comics industry that's very lacking in diverse female characters, you know, she kind of fit a different niche that really wasn't being represented well ever in comics. So, I mean, the fact that she is overweight was unique.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, not what was Amanda Waller there for a while before they retconned her. But yeah, not a lot of characters like that. So I remember, you know, there being some public support for this character a while ago and clamoring for her, and then it just kind of died off. And then, you know, fast forward to this book, and I'm thinking they may have waited a little too long to get that out, but I'm sure it takes a while to ramp up a new title. But that being said, I thought it was a pretty good debut. I wanted, because it was a number one, and because I'm not reading the original that she came from, I kind of would have liked a little more explanation on her, a little more intro.
They did lack in that. That's a fair point.
For me, it was kind of tough to put everything together, where she comes from in the universe, in the shared universe. You know, there was a pretty good intro to her, but, you know, maybe there was just kind of a little brief explanation that I didn't really fully grasp there at the end about where she fits into the Valiant universe. But besides that, I mean, they did a pretty good job of introing her, introducing us to this character. She's likable, and she's someone that you can get behind. So those are all good things.
Yeah, I think the fact that it's been so long since the Harbingers were really last seen puts this book at a little bit of a disadvantage. It's they could have struck much faster and I think had a better outcome. If it, like you said, it was right on the heels of when she was really kind of the breakout character at the moment.
At least like one panel, maybe like one panel of them together, you know, a scene from something that would have been reminiscent for you guys that have been reading it and would have given us a little more context that were new to the title.
We do get that. Right. It's about 3 or 4 pages, 5 or 6 from the end, actually.
Okay, from the end.
Yeah, there's a scene that's got Harada, and it's one of the flashback scenes or whatever.
Well, my lack of familiarity with Valiant didn't help.
Well, and that's the thing, is they've got a bit of a stratified universe in terms of how long it's been coming out. Granted, it's only been, you know, 3 or 4 years or whatever, but it's been a long time, it feels like, within that period, since we've really seen her, since the events they're harkening back to, and they could have set the stage a little bit better and a little bit stronger.
So Harbinger isn't even an existing title anymore?
No, no. Okay. And hasn't been for a while, like maybe a year?
Okay. But this is a new launch. They're going to relaunch Archer and Armstrong, right?
Yeah.
Anything else in that first that new wave?
I would have to go look up which titles they're relaunching and stuff. I don't have it off the top of my head. And, you know, we get Archer in here. We get enough things that if you're catching the references, you can kind of see where she fits. But
yeah, yep.
It's only if you're really hip deep in that universe that it's easy to do.
And Valiant really, really wants all-in readers, don't they? You know, they kind of rely on them.
I think they know they're going to get that. I do think, I mean, I've heard from one or two of their guys that they're really hoping to have kind of that breakout hit that just does head and shoulders above the rest. But, you know, they're okay with people being all-in, too. I think this is a book that, again, I wish they would have come out with a little earlier. I'm glad they've come out with it. I think doing it as a 4-issue miniseries was a smart choice. And if it sells well, they can always do another miniseries or whatever. But, I mean, to your earlier point, Faith is a different kind of female lead character than the other ones out there. And that says a lot in this day and age with Batgirl, Harley, Squirrel Girl, Ms. Marvel, the various Spider-Women. We've got a lot of strong female lead characters out there, some which are, you know, in Moon Girl even, filling a variety of, ethnicities, ages, viewpoints, and so forth, that coming out with something that just isn't, you know, a carbon copy or cookie-cutter version of another one of those characters, you know, that's cool. I'm glad they're doing that.
Yeah, I like that. I hope it sells well, and I hope it has sustained sales. I think most of Valiant stuff drops into the single digits pretty quickly and is in the, 5,000 to 8,000 sales range, I think.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, Eternal Warrior is doing somewhere in the 10, but it's only on its like second or third issue.
Yeah. So they usually pretty much settle into the single digits, and that's I don't think that's what they want. For a while they were doing 12 and 15, I think, for a little while back in the early heyday, and it seems to have really, really worn away, and they just don't have those sales anymore. So they need something like this to really catch hold.
Well, they absolutely want better sales, and I think that's part of why they tend to be rotating through some of their titles, so as not to strip mine a few of their properties. They've got Exo, Harbinger, Archer and Armstrong, a number of the other ones that it's like, okay, this runs for a little bit. Okay, that's not going so well. Let's get another one out there.
So yeah, I got kind of confused when they kind of ended some things and then did a bunch of minis, and then I really didn't know. I lost track of what they were actually releasing at that point.
Confused as well, yeah.
This is the first time I've really paid attention to them again since that thing that they did. And, you know, the only other thing I remember was the incredibly misguided what was it, incentive miniseries?
Oh yeah. Book of Death, Harbinger, the Legend of the Geomancer.
So this is really the first positive thing I've really thought of Valiant in a while. And like I said, I like the idea. I like the character. It's not a bad debut. I would have liked a little more entry level stuff for those new to the title. Because I mean, I think a girl that wanders into a comic shop, okay. I know, go with me on the premise. It's possible that she could wander into the comic shop and see someone like her on the cover and want to check that out. And you don't want to have there too much inside stuff that she would have to know to really enjoy it. And so I think that might have been a slight detriment to this first issue. But besides that, it was pretty solid. And I gave it a B.
I went with a B minus. I liked it. I thought it was good. But I think they didn't have enough of a first issue aspect, given how long it's been since this character's really been kind of heavily in use and since most of the other Harbingers have been seen. And we'd seen them in whatever one of the last crossover things was. But it's, again, it's been a little while. I think they're doing some good stuff with this character. They could have, and I think should have made it a little bit more accessible. So we'll see how it does. I don't think it's going to be the breakout hit that they're looking for, but again, four-issue miniseries, I'm glad they're giving this character a solo feature to see how it works.
Yeah, I applaud their effort, definitely.
So it has been a busy week for me. I have not really read all that much else that came out this week. I've read Batman and Robin Eternal, Grayson, maybe two or three other things.
Yeah, I'm about the same way. Half a dozen books. I haven't really put a big dent in my stack this week.
Now, what's interesting, and we talked about this a little before recording and such, there's this rumor coming out, and hopefully it's just a rumor, but, you know, it probably isn't. But at the moment, that's all it is. That DC, there's this rebirth concept they've got, which currently amounts to a blue curtain with the word rebirth on it. So no hard information yet. But a lot of people, Bleeding Cool being one of them, are speculating that we may get a line-wide renumbering of everything, possibly a reboot of the continuity. Don't know about that, but we may see some titles go away, some new titles replacing them. And, you know, pretty much par for the course. We saw that after most of the September events. Some titles would end there and new ones would pick up on the Zero issue or on the Villain issue or, you know, after Convergence or what have you.
Yeah, but I kind of was happy that they maintained 24 titles, I think, and maintained their numbering and didn't go ahead and renumber those when they could have.
Mm-hmm.
And I was happy that they didn't do that. And I think they're just probably staring at their competitor saying, look at this. They're just printing money over there. And all they have to do is change the numbering.
Well, I don't think that's all that Marvel has done. And I hope that the people at DC don't feel that way. But I do hope that they feel that, gosh, the guys over at Marvel are just trouncing them in terms of sales and popularity right now. Because I think that is the case by and large.
I mean, I think if we go down and look at some of the 80, 90 titles that Marvel puts out every month, we could say pretty much all they're doing with some of them, a percentage of them, is just throwing a new number one on there.
Oh, absolutely. They're using the new number one flagrantly. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, they're not all Shakespeare over there.
No. But people are talking about the books and the content of the books in positive terms for Marvel books, whereas a lot of people are more, I think, apathetic, myself included, about some of the DC stuff coming out right now. And I don't think doing a month of rebirth issues followed by new number ones for everything in and of itself fixes it. I also don't think it's necessarily a horrible idea and, you know, a massive evilness in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But it comes down to, does the rebirth issue, if they do a month of those, what makes those special? What makes those interesting, unique? How does it rebirth the characters or whatever it's supposed to do? And then what justifies number ones across the board, if that is indeed what they're going to do? And most importantly, are they rethinking the storytelling? Are they rethinking what these characters are and should be? And are we going to get better stories as a result of all of this? Or regardless of all of this, are we just going to get better stories? Because yeah. I think there's, a malaise and apathy that's surrounding DC right now. They got to shake off.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't read the Bleeding Cool article, and there's a smattering of articles out there, so Google Rebirth and DC Comics and you'll find tons to look at. Now, all of them have kind of a different take. I'm focusing on, I kind of like Bleeding Cool's take. It seemed like they had a source somewhere, and sometimes they're not 100%, but sometimes they're spot on. So what they're saying is kind of status quo Batman. Let's take Batman for instance. We'll go through 52.
Mm-hmm.
So in May, issue 52 will come out, and then in the first half of June there will either be a Batman like issue zero rebirth issue, or maybe a Batman Rebirth number one, something like that. And then the second half of June, they're going to renumber that as Batman number one. It'll kick off as a new number one and then go biweekly. And then, of course, they're juggling creative teams at the same time, which I think is it's cool. It's kind of interesting. I'm glad to see Scott Snyder. If he does move from Batman to Detective, he'll probably tell different types of stories, probably less extensive. I think that there's something to be said for that. Did you say you saw something where it might be Tom King taking over the Batman book?
Yeah, there was an article as we record this on Tuesday, February 2nd, and I'm dating us as to when we're doing this in so much, because, I mean, by the time this episode goes up almost a week from now, things may have been, you know, released and official or whatever.
Or refuted.
Or refuted. Or renumbered yet again. But yeah, the Comic Book Resources article, and they have caveats out the wazoo here, because again, it's all rumor at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, while it hasn't been quote-unquote locked down, the rumors are suggesting Tom King is going to take over the writing duties on Batman, and it would go biweekly. And that we may also see the end of Batman, Superman, Superman, Wonder Woman, with those potentially turning into a Trinity title sometime after Rebirth that would go biweekly, starring all three, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Grayson may go away in favor of a Nightwing title. Starfire may go away. We may get a Titans title in addition to Teen Titans.
So everything that you're mentioning so far, I think, is a really good move. I think they're all pretty good moves.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get some of the other ones that are rumored, I'm a little less certain of, but yeah. Most of them I think are good ideas. But new Green Lantern, I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. So, okay, we're going to put Hal Jordan in the what appears to be the secondary Green Lantern title, because it's Green Lantern Corps, and new Green Lantern will have somebody else. So it almost is like inverting which may be the primary title there, which is weird.
Yeah.
And then two others, Man of Steel and The Space, Super Space Man. I put the spaces in there verbally so you could see them or hear them. I don't know what that would be. To me, what they call the titles, who they put on them, you know, I'm curious about it, whether this comes to pass or not, but it comes down to, are they shuffling the deck chairs in the Titanic, or are they actually going to be telling better stories?
Well, I mean, Batman has been so consistent over time.
That is fair. There are some places they're telling some outstanding stories. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to dismiss those.
And so I think, you know, because it's been so consistent, on the one hand, I can say, I worry that, what are you messing with the one, you know, that this has been their tried and true bestseller every month for years now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then I also get, let's capitalize on it, its consistency, and double it. And even if we get a little bit of attrition, Batman's still going to be solid, and we're going to sell twice a month. So I can see that it's a calculated risk, but I think it's a smart one. I think bringing Nightwing back is brilliant. Grayson was well received, but I think a new Nightwing title is going to be really embraced by the industry. The Trinity, I think, is smart, especially with hopefully movies that don't stink coming out.
Two things. First off, if Scott Snyder, going back to that point for just a minute, takes over Detective and he's telling basically the same stories he would have told in Batman, just under the other title.
Yeah, I hope not.
Well, on the one hand, if he does the sales go up to where Batman was? And does Batman either stay up, fall down, whatever?
Yeah.
I mean, your point about them doubling down is very interesting and could happen. But then the other thing you just mentioned there about the movies, one of the things I was reading on one of the links you had sent me today was how a lot of this may get their title, or their lineup of titles, more in line with the TV shows and movies. And I've got really mixed feelings about that, leaning towards, that's not a good idea, even though I'm really enjoying the TV shows. I mean, the movies, we really haven't gotten enough of them out to get a track record there for the current crop.
Right.
But, I mean, Arrow, Flash, Gotham, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, all a lot of fun. But
none of those have been embraced in comic form. We had that digital first Arrow for a while.
And digital first Flash.
Yeah, but they didn't really catch on.
Well, no, because they were, again, digital first. They were competing with the mainstream Green Arrow and Flash books. And Green Arrow has gotten much more Arrow-like over the last couple of years from where it started.
Yeah.
So it's just a losing battle, though, to chase that, because those TV shows only last so long. If they had done that 10 years ago, we would have had everything matching like Smallville or something. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed Smallville. I enjoyed the comics based on that. But are the comics the derivative material or the source material? You really can't have it both ways. And they're trying to.
Yeah. And another thing that concerns me, by and large, I think there's a lot of good stuff here. And I'm kind of hoping some of these come to fruition. But the whole Rebirth thing and the Rebirth issues for these titles are where I'm concerned. I'm concerned that this is, what does that mean? what does this Rebirth issue mean? Is it just a resetting of a timeline? It's not a whole other reboot. I would hope not. Is it a reset to a previous status quo? I don't know. That's where I'm kind of worried, that area.
Agree with your concern there. The question I would have is there a good answer to that?
Yeah. Which one? I don't know if I like any of those.
That's my point. I don't like the let's jettison the continuity and go somewhere new. It's like, well, wait a sec. I just invested in a couple of years in the New 52.
Yeah. Since 2011, I've been banging the New 52 drum, and you're going to throw it out?
And I'm not saying stick with it either, because it's got some flaws.
I know.
But if you go to the pre-Flashpoint thing, it's like, well, what's this all about? If you go to something new, what's all this about? I mean, how can they gracefully get out of this situation into a better position? And one of the suggestions I saw on one of the links was embrace the multiverse.
Yeah.
You know, don't pick and choose, leverage them all. And I think there's something to be said for that. But go in with it with a game plan, have a strong game plan, have one that will work. I mean, if I were at DC, and I were thinking, you know, sales aren't where we'd like them to be, you know, people aren't really happy with what we're doing, where do we go from here? I would do surveys out the wazoo and find out what the general consensus is about who these characters are. And are you really writing stories that reflect what people think they are, what people want them to be, and, or at the very least, what you in-house think they ought to be? You know, one of the other suggestions I saw on one of those links you sent was just how much of the DC titles are so Batman, Gotham, and Justice League centric, and how we don't have, you know, the Doom Patrol, the Legion of Superheroes, the Justice Society. There's this wealth of great characters out there that they're really not tapping into. And, you know, we read the Injustice Gods Among Us annual that was essentially a Plastic Man issue.
Right.
And I'm like, man, you could sell me on a book with that take on Plastic Man so easily. And it would be fun. It would be different than a lot of stuff that's out there. But the question is, how much of this is just rumor? I don't say a grain of truth to it. I think we will see before the end of the year, probably around the timeline these rumors are suggesting, a shakeup in the DC titles. We'll see some people switch titles, you know, replacing. This may all come to pass exactly as we're seeing the rumors. It may be a little different, but I think something needs to happen. But if they get to where they're jettisoning continuity, that's going to be one that makes me stop and take stock as to, you know, how many more times do I want to go around this merry-go-round?
And I wonder if retailers are going to be a little gun-shy this time around. A lot of them got burnt with Convergence, and I don't know if that still stings, and they're going to be very conservative going into any new DC endeavor.
I wouldn't compare this to Convergence. I would compare it to the New 52 after Flashpoint, and also the 1 year later stuff, both of which did well in the initial month in sales.
Yeah. It's so close to Convergence. I wonder if there's going to be a little bit of reticence, because I think there already was with a lot of those number ones that launched after Convergence, that those launch sales were much lower than you would normally see.
It comes down to, can DC regain the trust and the faith of the readers and the retailers? Great, you're going to do number ones. Why should we care?
Yeah, and I guess you really only need one of them, because if the retailers have faith in you, they'll stock your book. And if the readers have faith in you, they'll pre-order it.
I think you got to have both, and you've got to fulfill the faith. You've got to have enough copies on store shelves, and great, you sold it to retailers. They had the faith, the readers don't. That burns the retailers. You're not going to get their faith the next time you need it. And there will be a next time. Hopefully not another one of these limelight restarts, reboots, renumbering, whatever it turns out to be. But you've got to have enough copies at stores and enough people demanding those copies for this kind of thing to work. And it can. We've seen it happen again with the new 52 stuff. But if it's a let's go back to the well and start all over again every couple of years, it's hard to build traction in a narrative universe that way.
They need to put 3D lenticular covers on these rebirth issues.
Hey, wait, they've done that 2 years running at one point. And
they took a break, though. They've been gone for a while.
I want to see a comic that's got a lenticular cover. You open it, and then it's got a hologram cover. You open that, and then you get a die-cut cover. All of this, of course, coming polybagged.
Yes.
You know, eight covers later, you get to the two-page story, and you're good.
Right. You probably should put a blank on the outside just in case you need to take that to a con.
Yeah. I like that idea. And then do it as
that's all cover. How about all cover, no story?
Then you do a flip book, and it's that way on the other side, too. Again, I don't know how much of this is just rumor with DC and how much of it is going to pan out, but...
There's already a post on the forum, so you have a chance to weigh in. There's been some good conversation going back and forth, so love to hear what your thoughts are on some of these. And we'll throw these links in the forum as well, so you guys can check out what we're talking about, what we're seeing. And then thumbs up, thumbs down. What do you think?
Well, and there's also the other thread on the forum about the other rebirth with the Hanna-Barbera characters.
Yeah, that I didn't read that one. So that is interesting. There was some interesting titles being thrown out.
New take on the Scooby-Doo gang. That's been reported.
That's been reported. Okay.
That's actual fact, I believe. Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, which is a new take on that stuff. Wacky Racer World, Future Quest, I think it is. That one sounded interesting with Johnny Quest and a lot of the space characters. A new take on the Flintstones. Again, some of this, it's like, I don't know that they need to, quote-unquote, fix the Hanna-Barbera characters, but they may be doing kind of a revitalization of them that just worked really well for Archie.
Yeah.
It could be a lot of fun. It could be a train wreck, but it could be a lot of fun. There are a few of them I'll probably check out. At least they're using
them. I mean, if you own them, why not use them every once in a while? I like that idea. I mean, it's definitely not for me, not my speed, but I mean, I hope it catches on with someone.
If they can use them without violating the ongoing property, if you know what I mean. At one point, they did Wildstorm, a Thundercats series. It was frankly a little bit more adult than I felt it should have been.
Really?
Yeah. And it was just, it felt inappropriate. And it's not a question of, oh, were you offended? No. It's like, this is a kid's property. Keep it, you know... If it's not going to continue to be a kid's property, you've got to be really clear about that. There's just a certain social responsibility, I think, to be had.
Well, yeah, when they did Afterlife with Archie, they made it pretty clear. Mature. It's a mature book, not your run-of-the-mill Archie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty clear that you should stay away if you're looking for Riverdale stuff.
Exactly. And it can be done. It can be done well. Again, that doesn't seem to be the direction they're going necessarily with the Hanna-Barbera stuff, but it's going to be sufficiently different than what had gone before. Some people may just be a little, you know, hey, I liked what it was before. And that's fine. So it's already looking to be like DC's going to do some interesting stuff this year, which is good. I think they need to. I just hope they've got it well thought out. I hope it's well written, very entertaining, and that it pans out for them.
And predicted by two or three of our listeners on the year-end weekly comic spotlight.
Absolutely. This could be that turnaround that a lot of our listeners predicted.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I'm hoping it is. Both so they're right and so we get better DC books. It's a win-win.
Yeah, I think so too.
So anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Batgirl 48 from DC, Spider-Man number 1 from Marvel, and Kennel Block Blues number 1 from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.